Well, it tried to kick back on, but it did. Too many things going on here. Anyway, the whole issue of up and out, you know, it's almost quasi-military. In fact, the senior, Foreign Service is basically, it's treated as if you are, as if you are a colonel or higher, you know, general, in the military. You know, same kind of status. You're accorded that kind of an honor. And, you know, it's minister, senior ambassador, stuff like that. And that one will be making the effort to try and get those kinds of posts, or to seek those kinds of posts. And I guess that when you're in that kind of a thing, I don't know that the mandatory retirement applies. You know, you can certainly retire at any time, and you know, once you have a retirement available to you. So, once you're in, you're going to have to do what it takes to get in. Because I would intend to do well and not say things like I have in the past. I say, well, I don't really want that kind of position, so I'm not gonna play that game. And you go, yes, you are gonna play that game. You know, not to fight all of it. Well, it's a competitive system. I go, yes, I understand it's a competitive system. It's just, but I just intend to win. You know, and I'm not gonna play. I hope it's not in a position of playing favorites, you know, doing all of the garbage. Although I imagine there's going to be a certain amount of that needs to be done. So, just accept that as something that's going to need doing. And it'll just have to happen. You know, one of my, I don't want to call them idols, one of my, the things that one of the people that I look up to is Sir Thomas More, and what he did, and how he always looked at me, the quiet life, to say, oh, don't you wish your quiet life? Oh, you want to be in the position of this or that, but don't question your morals to get there. I need to go ahead and read his biography anyway. The biography by his son-in-law, Roper, William Roper. And, get a sense for the kind of person that he was. Of course, we all know he's going to be biased, for Pete's sake. You can just see it. Of course it's going to happen. And you need to take postings. You need to take positions. You don't need to turn down anything. And that kind of comes along with the whole thing. I think it was almost 2 years ago when I said to myself, you need to take opportunities. When opportunities present themselves, take them. Don't sit there and say, oh no, I'm happy where I am. You know? You need to become the person you need to be. I think I still got the card in my wallet that I think I came up with. I need to look over that. I don't look at it very often, and I don't even recall having read it since I composed it. I've seen it there, and I said, oh yeah. I don't know that it really speaks to the opportunity thing, but it reminds me of the choice I made to say, Jay, you're going to take advantage of opportunities when they come up. For all I know, this change from salary to hourly was to shake me a little bit and to make me look and say, you know, you need to be doing something else. You know, it's time to move on. So here I am, moving on. That the need is that I probably need to move up rather quickly. But I also see that this gives the opportunity to move up quickly. Tough choices need to be made. Snap decisions that affect lives needs to be done. We go, that needs to be me. So that in the course of 10 years, before 10 years, you're a person of significance. You're a person I don't know if you see it as a rising. That's usually something attributed to someone younger than I am. But say, this is a guy to be reckoned with. This, you know, and not and to say, to already be placing yourself in. In those kinds of roles, or when those roles present themselves, that you have no fear of simply walking into them and saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is the decision that we're going to make in this game. That we're going to help people. And insofar as we have to figure out where people stand, determine people by looking at them. Need to develop that skill. And I think what will merit me best is not listening to other people. Not putting not making the supposition that they are going to be better at this than I am, or that their opinion by nature should matter. You know, the whole issue, the issue of the autism. Said, don't sit here, Jay, and get weird about, I can't trust myself because of autism. Forget it. Because as far as I'm aware of, I've always been right. We have this thing, Hoyt Scablin, my friend. He was a branch president, I was the eldest corn president at the time. And we had a serious difference of opinion. So I think it was the first PPI we really had. And I think his tendency is to be a micromanager. And my tendency is to gouge out the eyeballs of micromanagers. I will not be micromanaged. And it didn't last. It didn't last hardly any at all. I was changed to what I would consider to be a support role, and that worked far better. And he wanting to get this, and wanting to get that, and making sure that things happen, and of course I'm a person that makes things happen, that get stuff done. And so therefore, we worked fine on that level. But it was also the point of don't interfere and change. Sure, figure. And I don't want to say that. It isn't a question of turn. It is a question of you aren't going to get what you want out of life by micromanaging Jay. Because what you will get is Jay leaving. And you go, things work far better and you'll be far more satisfied with the ultimate result if you manage Jay very little. Let Jay do what Jay does. Involved in these things. And that I need to trust myself in saying, don't, you know, I had a very clear impression once as the clerk. I was being asked to do something, I was instructed to do something by somebody. Thank goodness they weren't my line leader. But even if they were my line leader, I would have come back and said, no, I'm not going to do that. I had a clear impression not to do that. So I'm not going to do that, period. It will not be done. So we will handle it a different way. I don't know how much you talk about that, but I think it would simplify things to say, this is just the way that's always worked. And it's not to be cocky, it's not to say that I'm all that, it's not to do anything at all. But we will both be happier if I have a pretty light leash. Ordering on no leash at all. But that's, you know what, I think that's more of a time thing. You can't tell people, you must trust me, immediately. I still have all the preparations I made to go to Shetland are still in place. I never took back many of them at all. I did unpack a couple of boxes. I do recall unpacking some
box.
I found it very interesting what I saved. And what I saved was not computer books. Stuff I used to get my certification in CompTIA A+, Net Plus, Linux Plus. In fact, I think I just did Linux Plus so I could quantify what I had been teaching myself all the time. It's still, I still had to cram for it, because your only experience is what you do. You know, people say, well, do you have experience with virtual server? And you go, gosh, no, I don't have any experience with that. And they go, well, okay, you know. I didn't have it. I did a little bit of virtualization, but not with real hardware that can handle it. Therefore, I usually took it off just due to the point of, what was the point? It wasn't going to be a good test then. And that's important. I remember this road being so nice. Much nicer than it used to be. I'm on the road going through Guadalupita. Going up and around. Anyway, getting back to things I need to work on. The number one thing I need to work on is I need to trust my impressions more than I do. And I think I need to go to bat for them more than I do. I don't know where Shetland fits into this at all. It may not. And that isn't an immediate problem. It'd be great if it did. It would be kind of, a vindication of stuff I've been working on last year. But, however, not necessary. Trust myself more. Spend far too much time being uncertain. In that, and it's just important to take some risks. Lisa's willing to go into this career field. And so we need to go into this career field. And it seems like a good match with me, and that's important. I've always stayed away from careers, and I didn't think that was a good thing for me to do. In this, I think I'm finding something that it might be a good thing for me to do. I'm thinking about tables and such, how I would want to furnish an office, because with the job I have now, I took whatever was available and ignored the rest. Or just have your sense for it. I think I'd be interested, I've been thinking about it for a long time, to get into one of those standing desks. The one where you actually work at your desk standing up. I think that's interesting. Poor water jug is just getting beat around as I drive through. We're up in the mountains. It's beautiful, of course. I enjoy the mountains when I can get them. I've been able to for a while. The whole Shetland thing, we decided that we were saving money in preparation for going that way. And it ended up getting chewed up in kid breaks. And so that's kind of what we're doing now, and we're spending off some of that money that had originally been socked away for other purposes. I don't think I'm going to have to become a different person, but I'm going to have to spill myself out of it. And I hope that is the function of finding a labor. And I guess I like the concept of life work. I never felt like computers was going to be my life's work. I didn't want to do it that long. I find that the more I do it as a career, the more, or ostensibly, you know, I am always doing this stuff. It gets less and less interesting to me over time. You know, fixing a computer, doing the same things, Very boring. Very boring. And, foreign service, frankly, sounds like a little more action. I don't know if I'm prepared for action like you will, you know, pull you out of some room and say, Mr. Jim, I really want you to become a spy. And you go, I don't think I'm really interested. Let's talk about it. Like I said, if I don't want to pass up on opportunities, also I'm not particularly keen on getting killed or getting beat up a lot. I've never been a guy who really is into, you know, physicality. I don't really look at myself as a physical person. I'm a big guy, but I'm a teddy bear. I don't know if I would get into it. I might. Never really pursued it. And it seems to me like what they really ask with those kinds of people are really physical types. And this is basically, am I doing kind of a form of spying in the Foreign Service? And the answer is, of course. I said, I learn things, I'm told things, I hear things, I pass them up the chain. I said, there's nothing. I said, I don't see a whole lot different about that. It's just which agency you're doing it on behalf of. Just do it on behalf of the Department of State is, you know, fine. I don't immediately even have an issue with that. I'm getting beat up and stuff like that. I said, that's a military function, and I'm not the military type. I'm not a yes sir, yes sir, best, sir. I'm not that kind of a person. Am I a plotter? Oh, yes. So, you know, one of my great idols is Sir Thomas More. And, you know, he was a person that was trying to be helpful. I don't know if he wished he was somewhere else. He was where he was. And to a certain extent, I think God put him there. And that's what's most important to me, is the determination of, is this where I'm supposed to go? And that God's going to help me figure that out. It seems very obvious from that standpoint. I'm struggling, you know. They make you choose a path, a track, immediately. There is no other group that makes this decision except for you. It's really very, very, you know, another instance where this is very, very strange process. And I do wonder if I shouldn't have picked another another track besides economics. Barely starting to snow. But I've almost reached my highest point here. I've almost reached the crest of where I'm going before I go down into which valley is? Angel Fire. The Valley of Angel Fire. And I'm willing to go on the road less traveled. In fact, I often do. I often take the road less traveled. So when people say, well, you didn't follow the typical path, and you go, I never do. Jason, well, you're not going to be very good in this organization being like that, you know, well, then you need to make a determination. Because I'm not going to walk away. If you tell me to leave, that's fine. I'm not walking away. So, if I've chosen the economic track, I said, the economic track it is. I thought there was good reason to say it was, when it was presented to me in these little guides as to how to make the determination of what's best, what's right for you, it came up as the highest one. It was the first one that I saw when I was doing things. Number one rule of test taking is go with your first gut instinct. It's usually the best. So I'm sticking with my first gut instinct, which is economic. Economic track. I don't want to spend my time pushing a lot of paper. I don't want to spend my time analyzing each other. That's not interesting to me. The political track seemed the next one that might have been interesting. But I think it involved a whole lot of, you know, it seemed a little smarthier, and I didn't see myself being smarty enough, or really, really desiring to be smarty, you know. I rather, pardon me for saying, you know, I like being an expert, although I'm typically not. That's usually the role I fall into, you know, the little professor. And so I kind of look at the function that way. A good starting point in any development, I think, is where you've already shown some talent. I think that's important. Now, where it takes me after this is anybody's guess. We shall see. I will be seeing right next year. I would not be even interested in making a conjecture how it will go. That's okay, you know. Economic leaders tend to become the leaders. Economics really drives this world. Honestly, people say, well, thanks for running everything. And you go, I think that's true. And if you're going to be a diplomat, you need to be in the position that lends itself most to being a powerful person. And I was talking to Lisa yesterday about my personal efficacy. No, I wasn't. I was talking about soft power and about the fact that one of the most interesting one of the most interesting statements that has ever been made of me and it was made by John Harrington, was "You're Intimidating." I went, "I am." He says, "They're probably intimidated." I said, "You're a big guy, you're intimidating." And I constantly revisited that statement and said, "Oh my gosh, I'm intimidated. I never would have thought. I've always been kind of mousy and unsure of myself. And to think that just by just my size, I am an intimidating person." Floored me at the time. But now it's important to say, you know what, Jay, you need to take this to, you need to use this. This is a tool. Not to maximize it. I'm not a bodybuilder. I need to lose some weight, but I don't need to lose a lot of weight. I think I need bulk. I think bulk is important here. Not fat bulk, but just, you know, sturdy. I need to appear sturdy. I think that helps with diplomacy. To say, this isn't some mousy person who is having the courage and goes, hey, you threaten me, I'm already threatening you back. And to realize that built in, I have something of an upper hand. And I need to know that I do, acknowledge that. And don't seek to minimize. Don't seek to minimize the fact that I'm a big fish. So I'll need to study on that too, along with my problem. I need to get rid of self-deprecation. That needs to go away. Not to be comfortable among all classes of people, but to say thank you. When somebody gives you a compliment, you say, "Thank you. We're going to take care of them." Phone and electrical problems up where I just came from. Oof, scary. But regardless, probably good now that I've gotten more into wearing hats. Because I may have to be wearing hats. You know, whatever fits in the culture you're in, one needs to. Without losing yourself. Somebody will say, and he was a protege of somebody else. You know, Jason Nero was a protege of this guy. You know, I've never looked at myself as a protege of anyone. Always considered myself somewhat self-made. call it what you will. Makes no difference. I need to get more comfortable in my own skin. Self-confident, but not not bombastic. I don't need to lose my humility, but not to rate it as self-deprecation. Not necessary. Put forth an effort while I get decided. So I'm concerned with this, this, and this, but we will persevere. One nice thing about having a poor memory is that I don't remember the last time I failed. I'm sure I have. However, it's not going to work me over. There's some upsides to this. Oh. I'm not a typical person. I don't surround myself with junk. I do have tools about me. It's tempting, you know, strangely, it's tempting to see how my other phone does, of course. I like the other phone better. I think I may want to go back to it. Just for the simple reason that, it does a better job. I can do the recordings on this phone. Although I can do the recordings on the other phone, I think it's better. I might end up putting this phone back in a box and saying, you know what, I don't want it. So I've already made the commitment that I was going to take this phone. I'll take it, put it away. I'll sell it off to somebody. The keyboard it's got is nice, but frankly, I think I like my other phone better. The next chance I get, I'll probably switch out the phone. Even though I have 4G, what difference does it make? Let the kids have this toy. That's not a bad idea. They've been bugging me about getting kind of a cool little toy. This might make for a nice little toy. If it gets broken, it's under warranty. Yeah! Save my little phone for recordings. save this phone for let the boys play. The other phone I have is perfectly adequate for the cause. In fact, the thing that I was kind of half hoping to overcome which was the email issue, it wasn't overcome, so it really becomes silly on a certain level. So yeah, I think I'm gonna go ahead and change back to the other phone and give this to the twin as a plaything. The LG did have better battery. This thing has a far better battery. And I'm so skittish about 4G that I hardly ever use it. So I don't know that it even matters that it's got 4G capability. The fact that it works on the wireless, I think, is probably the best part of it. I think I need to find some way to lock out the ability to get on the wireless. I think I need to do something about that. Find some kind of app that locks out the wireless. I don't want the twins using it as a computer. And so far as they want to use it for games and such, I, you know, have at it yet. Have at it. Have at it. No problem. Good. Let's see, I'm not right. Rex would be really good at this, I think. Yeah, on the administration side. Seems like the administration found himself. Well, it seemed to me that he was very comfortable. He was far more comfortable than I am. I don't know who I should look to for this. Yeah, I think sometimes the Michael West, you know, bird notice for being that sort of a kind of guy who tends to always be in control, always know the right thing to do. You know, it's scripted, so he's always going to look amazing. Scripted people do. The most important thing here is not to try to be anything but myself. To be my best self, surely, but not to be anything beyond that. And to be my expansive self. But these guys seem to be the sort that are prepared to say, yeah, we know you're raw. I don't want to be that raw. I don't want to be like a raw kid out of college. You know, I don't want to be a cookie push college stiff, pinstripe type of somebody. Not what I want to do. But then again, I'm not. And they go, well, he comes from an interesting background. I do. Put me in a tough situation, and, you know, because I thrive. I thrive in tough situations. The gunners. A gun mechanic. They called me Doc. Because when it was just pouring down rain, which it will invariably do in the Bight of Benin, we were bringing on a supply ship. And we get involved in that, and we participate in helping to just get things down. Grunt work. And I was ran like a banshee, and all the rest of them were kind of scattering for cover. They preferred being down below. I don't know if it was a status thing. But I was up top. Getting everything off the pallet. And so I got the nickname Duck. And that's what I am. I don't hard difficult or unpleasant things need doing, that doesn't bother. One does not fully live. You don't feel alive until you're in those kinds of circumstances. This is real living. Sitting in an office building, sucking on refrigerated air, that's not living. Living is doing something else. Now, I don't think it involves, you know, having a gun strapped to your side. I specifically chose this over, like, the CIA, for instance. But because I don't perceive myself to be physically, capable. I don't see that as being my outstanding ability, is physicality. I would need to go through a lot of training not to be just kind of a bad dancer. I'm not a very good dancer. Ultimately, it may be the question of, you want to be in the CIA, and you go, well, I don't know, but I think I'd rather be an analyst than a field operative. How about that? But, you know, go through the training for this kind of thing. There's got to be some reason why I was born in the United States, because I have not yet figured it out yet. Oh, maybe this is it. The fact that I would do well in the diplomatic service. That's fine. Good. I'm glad. Watching a movie by Lawrence Lightfoot, and comes from I don't know what kind of family it comes from. Only heard. Anyway, it's really interesting. I found the movie very very odd. It's all about going into one of the financial centers, going to do that. One guy said, oh yeah, I'm going straight there. And he says, that sounds very good. Go beyond that. Did then the second guy came in and says, well, you know, I feel like I really need to know what's going on in the world. I think I'm going to take a job as a waiter while I work on my book, you know, or screenplay or whatever. And Mark came back and said, what a stunning misuse of your parents' money. And of course, the ending of the movie, both endings of the movie, was just absolutely just and of course, many of the, you know, it was very much left wing environmentalist. Wouldn't the world be a beautiful place when we're all surrounded by, you know, wind turbines and we share all the wealth, you know, the government confiscates everything from rich people and gives it to poor people. And I was thinking that this would be a rather weird perceived really uneven in kind of a class warfare sort of a way. You know, it kept skipping around between being, you know, hateful of rich people, the antagonism of those that work hard, there was this part in the middle where these people were on this bus, on kind of like the magic school bus, I suppose. And they were driving around, and the college professor, the historian, was telling you all about the way history really was. And, you know, I could smell his liberal bent pretty hard. And all of the things that were being said in the background, you know, about, how do you say it? That they were coming away from the dark, nasty, horrible world, opened up onto these beautiful, pastoral scenes of, you know, free energy, free this, free that. You're going, I understand its appeal. I understand its appeal to regular people. People who suffer and can hardly get by, because I understand that. I have been among those people. I have been one of those people for 20 20 years, probably about 20 years of my life, but not. I had skills. I put those skills to work, you know. It's foolish not to do so. It's foolish not to better yourself. And I dream of a world that looks quite similar. I don't know if I really care about the wind turbine, but I'm more of a solar man myself. Although it's far less efficient. I'm not a green initiative sort of a guy. Just not. When I look at other countries that need help, that need support, I would much rather them take stances better than what probably America has taken. I see too much that government tendency is to scrape a ton of life off of people's taxes. That's the point where there's almost nothing left. I do believe in free enterprise. Life. I believe we sequester natural resources too much. And the benefit of having natural resources more and more is taken out of the hands of individuals to use and misuse. It was that day, medieval history coming in, it was that day when the king said the forest belonged to him. Before then, the forest was simply the forest. You could go in, you could harvest wood, you could go and get go and kill animals for food, whatever was needed could be done, you could do there. But then all of a sudden, one day, they decided that the king owned the forest. It was exclusively his. And you had to have a license in order to do these things. Typically, it wasn't even a question of licensing. It wasn't a question of regulating the usages of these things. It was simply the king. And the answer was just no. People starved. The struggle was terrible, was rendered terrible. Where before, there were natural resources out there to get. If you could shovel up your coal, you could use it. And so far as these things were recognized, they had planted on the public good, and it was open to people. Now when industry started, when things started happening, so that it was more efficient to have a corporation come in and take those resources. What we saw more likely than not was that payments to government made to make these things happen never got retranslated back into what naturally needed to happen. Whatever that was used for, if it was wood, chopping, you know, the woodcutters going out, cutting down the wood, turning into logs for firewood. If some corporation got the contract to do wood cutting, did it so much more efficiently, accepted regulation so that the forest wouldn't be destroyed, you know, clear cutting activity, things like that. Those entities would compensate the government who was doing all the regulating. And instead of saying that that money was strictly for the regulatory function, that money needed to go back to making sure everybody had whatever firewood was provided. That those who had previously used it to keep themselves warm needed to be given the opportunity to get the heat they needed basically through something that is along the lines of their normal effort. The difference between subsistence farming and farming a cash crop. And that we've lost that over time. That inherent exchange has been lost. And environmentalists are doing nothing about that. If anything, they want to make the plight of the guy living up in the woods under harsh circumstances even more difficult. Because I think the environmentalist sees that guy as being a demon, and extremely rich guy who can pay for exotic green energy to provide for his very, what he's willing to pay millions of dollars for, basically a beautiful vacation home, much more interested in that kind of a person being there. I'm for the woodcutter. I'm for the guy that goes and says, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to collect what I need. This is my home. And so far as I have an excess, I have more energy to cut the wood than other people do. I will use that excess, or I'll either sell the excess, or give it to a friend, or provide it to my aging mother, or whatever. I'm much more with that person. And that just needs to be done to take care of that person. Too often we see government, American government included, that do 12 other things. If you wanted to use that money that was taken for not letting somebody access a coal field, use the money the government makes off of the processing of that. That's it. If you were to use a large portion of that to put up wind generators so that electricity can be provided, I know it's at a lower grade, so if they can have a system that on to a level replaces what that family lost to not being allowed to do that anymore. I'm all for. This is what we see, basically, from that standpoint. It's a collusion of large corporations and government helping each other out, but not really helping out the person, you know, the original person who made use of the resource on a sustainability level. Basically, what was taken was what was needed plus some for sale, for the cost of getting it, hauling it, perhaps processing to turn it into a marketable energy source. That's what we're talking about. That's what I'm saying. I'm sorry, to a certain extent, I don't think environmentalists are doing that. They're worried about pollution, things like that. I'm not saying that pollution isn't an issue and needs to be addressed. They're doing a fine job of that. There are other concerns needing to be done. That, I think environmentalists like to say that they're sympathetic to, and that everybody says, well, everybody, you know, the environmentalists are here, and they count as the counterbalance between big corporate users of natural resources and government. And I respectfully understand that they don't speak for those people. Because they don't. They are the Lorax. They speak for the trees. Government does not speak for the average person on any level at all. The majority of okay, well, I'll just remind stopping point here. Good. I'm taking my turn off here. Into Rumsfeld's house. For we are running a network drop. Which sadly is the most skilled work that I'll probably end up doing, and it's much more. And that's what I want to get away from more than anything else, but I really just don't like my humor. that's fine. You know, I was my writing always to be purposeful, and I've struggled over time in doing that, whether it was generating money for my family or whatever. To a certain extent, you can look at this job almost as a technical writing job. You go, I think I'm quite in line with that. Going through the traffic circles. You know what? I see the elegance. I respect the elegance of the traffic circle. I know some people don't like them at all. I know some people... you know, the biggest thing that happens as I go through these traffic circles here is the level of disobedience to them, of shuffling around, not even honoring the fact that there are lines down here. The fact that these things have been planned out to get you where you want to go as long as you're in the right lane. And people just kind of... I don't know what that means. Anyway, so... big, huge vehicles that have no way of staying in their lane. I don't know what to tell them. Anyway, so, okay, there's that. And I hope that is kind of an insight, helps me to see, and helps me feel better about this, a little more confident about it, that I'll be able to comport myself well. I'd hate to think that somebody just come in and say, you are so far out of your league, you don't even know what you're doing. You're just an idiot. And my contention is, I don't think I am. In fact, I think I would be able to do this sort of work better than most. I think I would find myself favorably competitive against people who are already doing it and have perhaps even done it for 5 years. And that's how I'm going to approach it. Not cocky to the level that I'm better than everybody else in the room, but to say I have a real contribution to make here. I think that's what I have, and we're here to discover if that's true. And it would be exciting to me if they came back and they said, you're right. We think you would do an amazing job here. And we look forward to you coming on board. We look forward to hearing your reports. We find your take on things insightful. That's the biggest thing I want to do. Because I want to be wanted and needed. And to be really honest, that doesn't happen to me very often. But I find the most stressful thing in my life is being underutilized. And it's partly my fault. If I had a different job, maybe I would be more utilized. But I'm not. There it is. Oh, good. My battery is in good shape. Okay. Before we get into all this, let me go ahead and stop this recording.